yesterday. We talked a little bit about quantum error correction. So we finished the three pieces we needed for quantum error correction: noise, encoding, and recovery. And then we talked a little bit about the stabilizer formalism. Then we came back to the accuracy threshold theorem, fault tolerance, and then the accuracy threshold theorem. And so that finished the quantum error correction part. Any questions on this that came to mind between yesterday and today? No? So, and then we moved on to QKD, which is, I'm going to finish with this. If there's a little bit more time, I'll talk about private quantum channel. So the goal of QKD is to exchange a key between Alice and Bob in such a way that they can then use that key, which is hopefully provably secure, that an eavesdropper cannot know essentially nothing about it. Not, it can know a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit, but you can make that bit as small as you want. And then once you have that key, you can use a usual classical channel to send your encoded information. You use that key to encode your message. And because Bob has a key also, then you can decode. And we've shown a little bit how it works. Now I'll get back to this kind of as a quantum circuit in a minute to kind of make the leap to private quantum channel. So we have this idea that Alice is going to send some photons to Bob, and then Bob will receive some photons. So Alice chooses randomly one of these four states. And in these four states, there's two components, which bits she wants to send for the key. And she really needs to have a random number generator to do this. Because if she chooses zeros all the time, I think Eve could at some point start to guess. So you really should the zero and a one of the key being really chosen. And then also choose randomly which basis she's sending some things. So number two, so Alice sends her photon to Bob. And then Bob measure a random basis, the 0, 1, or the plus minus basis. Then number four, Alice and Bob publicly compare their basis. Okay? And once they have their basis who agrees, then whatever bit Alice has sent, Bob will have the corresponding bit. Okay? When they have basis which don't agree, then they throw that result. So suppose are the bits that Alice sends, and then, so this is the bits, and then the basis, and then Bob chooses a basis, and then he gets the key, so this is the key. So when the bases are different from here and here, then you cross these parts, and then Bob gets the key at the end. If you realize, so from this, the key has been exchanged from Alice to Bob. The next piece that we've added is what happened if Eve comes in the middle, and the problem that Eve, she doesn't know which basis it is. So randomly, half of the time she'll choose the right one, the same one as Alice. Half of the time she'll choose one different. And when she chooses the one which is different, the key bit that Bob will get will be half of the time right and half of the time wrong. So there's a half of basis here, half of them wrong, so a quarter of the time, the answer for sure will differ between Alice and Bob, randomly.
I have a question. Is it possible for Eve to steal the photons and then not measure them until after Bob announces what he's measured?
But when Bob doesn't see the photon arriving, he cannot do anything. So, in fact, I'm in office 431. And if you go in my office, the door is open, come in. But if I'm not there, there's the funny little thing on the rack with a little telescope on it. And this is Bob. We decided to have Alice at IQC. So Bob is in my office, that's a telescope, and it's hooked up to an electronic piece, which is called a time tagging device. And it talks to Alice of when Alice sends some photons and check that the photons has arrived here. And if it doesn't arrive, then you have nothing here to compare, so you automatically kind of get rid of it. Okay, so Eve sends some things, and then so the next step that Bob does is that it goes and check if announced randomly of the bits which are left, choose some that is worth sacrifice, and those ones you won't use for the key, but you can use them to check if an eavesdropper has come in. Okay, and then if the bits agree, then all the time, then you are highly confident that Eve is not there. But if they start to disagree, then you throw the key away. And you have to remember that we have a message and we have a key. And then you don't encode it until you're sure that you have a key which is secure. So the fact that Eve has learned a piece of the key, it's no problem if you don't use it. Okay? So there's obviously one problem with quantum key distribution, which is how do you call this? Denial of attack. So
denial of service attack.
What?
Denial of service.
If Eve knows where the photons are coming, she's going to put her hand, stop all the photons, and then Bob will never receive any photons, so he won't be able to do anything. So if you really think about QKD in the practical world, you'll have to find a way to get around this. And the way around this is that you need to have more than only a single channel to send these potential photons. But if Eve is really good in going and cut them, so she can stop the communication, but she cannot stop the private information to go from one place to the other. Okay? So any questions on this? I think yesterday you mentioned, well, there might be a case where Eve knows a little bit of a bit, or some of the bits. Somebody asked that question, I cannot remember whom. And or sometime Bob might get the wrong bits. And in the real world, we think of Eve as a person who can do something wrong, but the rest of the world, the environment also, can play the role of Eve. And when we make proof of security, we don't distinguish between the two, okay? Because we don't know how powerful Eve is. If we needed to have 100% security, we know we'd be in trouble because it'll be impossible to send a photon from one location to the other. So there's a tool called privacy amplification, which says that if the error rate is smaller than, I think it's between 10 and 20%. There's a trick that you can do, measure parities of these bits. You'll sacrifice some of the bits, but you can reduce the errors that comes in. It doesn't work if you have a high level of error. And the threshold, as I said, is between 10 and 20%. I think it's 12 point something, depending the exact scheme that you're using, which tells you that this allows you a little bit of robustness to errors. So it's not really zero error that Bob will take into account. It is this 10% error. And if it is higher than this, then he cannot certify that the key, that no information has gone to Eve. But if it's below, there's a second step after having received this. And the name is privacy and amplification, where you can reduce the information that Eve has gone. Very roughly is that you compare two bits. You may XOR between bits. And if there are errors, then you can kind of make a correlation between two, and then you throw one of the bit away, and you're left with O's. And if the parity is the same between Alice and Bob for these two bits, then you're pretty certain that there's no other information that comes out. That's the basic idea. And so QKD doesn't have to be 100% perfect. But it's often seen or kind of mentioned that it's 100% secure. Well, it's 100% secure in theory. But in practice, there are assumptions. When you go up and look at the device that we have up there, it might not fulfill all the assumptions that we do here. I told you, you send 0, 1, plus, and minus. But it's pretty hard to make a single photon source, and you certify that you cannot send more than one photon. Suppose that you have 10% of the time, you have a second photon which is there also. And then Eve is really smart and almighty, and she has very metric. She finds a way to detect when there's two photons. And when there's two photons, she keeps one of them. So the protocol would go through. And this would not affect the state of Bob, so everything would be OK. And this is called a side channel. So there's some information that goes through because of the imperfection of the implementation. Okay? So today, people are looking at ways of trying to get around this limitation. And the problem in a tutorial using entangled state is a slightly better way or easier to check for this imperfection than these schemes, which use only single photons. And it relies on the fact that when you have entanglement between two people, if you have a third person, Eve, that gets information of either one of these two states, then the entanglement between this decreases. Quantum physics tells us that. And so if Eve gets information, then there must be a perturbance that is being seen between Alice and Bob. And you can detect this. You can do this with entanglement. We don't know how to do this with single photon. Yeah. We mentioned quantum computing in the implementation, which are still some years away. But there are QKD systems that you can buy today. So there's a company in Geneva called ID Quantic, which sells two boxes. You can put them far away from each other, up to about 100 kilometers, optic fibers that links them. And you can generate keys on both sides and use them. And there are claims that they exchange information between banks. And there were some elections also in Switzerland where they used this between two polling stations to transmit the encode the information that was transmitted from one station to the other. So this can work. The limitation that they have is that if you send a photon down an optic fiber, you can go to about 100 kilometers. And then the absorption becomes too high. And then the rate of key that you generate is becomes too small to be of any practicality. Now, mentioning this, this is something which is neat on QKD, is that the absorption of the photon does not violate or kind of cause problems for the security itself directly. If the photon doesn't come in, then and Bob knows it hasn't come in, then it just doesn't count it. So if you have less photons that come in, it doesn't have an effect on the security itself. In fact, not totally true, because detectors have these things called dark counts. And so you need to take this into account. But roughly, the fact that you have less photon is not itself a problem if the photon doesn't come in. As I mentioned yesterday, there's two ideas of going from 100 kilometers to cover the globe. One of them is to have a quantum repeater. A quantum repeater is a little device that would be a small quantum computer, would take a bunch of photons comes in, let's say five of them, do error correction on them because you've lost, let's say, one of them, recreate a new 5-qubit state, and then you can go further. So an analog of a classical repeater, if you look at the network of optic fibers around the world, every about 20 kilometers, you have a repeater, which boosts a signal, which is pretty incredible when you think about cables that goes from North America to Europe. Under the sea, there's these little repeating station that can do, and you have no clue what really these repeater stations is. You could have a submarine there tapping the information. In fact, they don't go with a submarine. apparently in England, where the fibers comes in, there's these big stations owned by governments of the UK and the US who looks at the traffic going from one place to the other. So when we have QKD who goes from one location to the other, we might be able to make this information secure. So repeaters is one of them. The other possibility, which I mentioned yesterday, is a satellite possibility. So people are working on both directions. I think the satellite will happen before the repeater, but once we have a repeater, you can put it everywhere. So not as costly than the satellite. So this is roughly where things are going. Okay. So the next thing, the last thing I'm going to do is make a slight generalization of QKD. The idea of QKD was to exchange a key. Once you have a key, you take your message, and then you have the encoded message is this, and then you can send it home. So I've put it that way because you can add in binaries quite well by the end of this course, but the next thing I want to do is, can we have a quantum circuit or a classical circuit which does the same thing? And you'll see why I want to introduce this in a second. So my message is 1110, and then my key is 01110. So I told you there is this gate. If they are the same, I put 0, and if they are different, it's a 1. You've been told in the first or second class that we have universal sets of gates. So what would be the gate that does that? That's it. So it's a C naught this. Okay, and what comes out here is the encoded message. And so if Bob on the other side has this, you know that if you do two C nuts, you don't do anything. That's how the decoding works. Now, you can understand easily how the encoding works if you think about it that way. Eve doesn't know what is this bit here of the key. So right now, instead of using 4 and 4, I'm going to be simple. Here's my message, 1 bit. Here's my key, 1 bit. My control knot. And you don't know if it's a 0 or 1. So what is the state of a qubit when you don't know what it is?
Mixed state.
OK. There's many mixed states.
Maximum
mixed state. OK. So you don't know what it is. So this is, you have no knowledge. This is a state with no knowledge. If you put it in here, and then you do the control knot, what do you get? Here. So you have a state 0, okay? And then this, you have a control knot, and you have a state. So this is the state of the qubit, and it's tensored 0, 0, plus 1, 1, and with a factor of 2 there. So you have 50% of the chance of having the input 0. If the input 0, it doesn't do anything to it. You have 50% chance of having 1. 1 is going to flip it. So you end up with a state 1001. So if you don't know what this is, then that state looks like the unit density matrix. You have no information, which is Eve is trying to tee up like this. So now we can understand how it works as a circuit.
Okay.
And we've done this for a classical bit. The idea of a private quantum channel is to do similar thing that they've done here, but instead of sending a classical bit, like 3 weeks ago, you would have sent classical bits to your channel. But after 3 weeks of this course, you have decided that you really want to send quantum information back home instead of classical information, because it's so much more powerful. You have so much more information that you can send. Which is a joke, because you still send one bit of information when they measure it, but you might be able to do some nifty things with quantum information. So you want to send a class quantum, a quantum bit. So what happens if you send now a state alpha 0 plus beta 1? Okay. So you have this, and then the quantum operation is that you, so this is the density matrix. Okay, you have a chance of not doing anything, which is this. And then you have a chance of flipping the bits. The flipping the bits is like changing alpha to beta. Okay, so it'll be plus beta, beta star, alpha star beta, alpha beta star, and alpha alpha star. And then there's a half in front of this. And so we add this, alpha plus alpha star, alpha star plus beta, beta star gives me what? If we have classical information, we would not have these off-diagonal terms, and you have the density matrix that we had. But here, suddenly there's some leftover. So if you try to encode this way a quantum state, then Eve could gather some information by looking at the off-diagonal terms. Okay? So what can Alice or Bob do to encode it in such a way that there is no piece of the density matrix? And speak loud.
By sending a mixtape?
So indeed, a mixed state will want. So what we want to do is we send here any state. So here's the maybe trying to turn the question into a math instead of a crypto one. We want to have any state here, rho. We want to do a quantum operation with a set of E's so that Eve has no information. And you know, okay, it has to be this.
The dephasing channel.
Okay, so if you do the dephasing channel, you'll get rid of these parts, but you'll be left with these.
But sure, now you can, if you do it probabilistically, I mean, you should get rid of the off-diagonal elements in the right-hand side.
So you're saying, let's do this first. You get this.
Then
do the perfect. That's exactly the answer. So. So the quantum circuit is the following. We have rho. And then here, we're going to put zeros or ones. That'll be our key. Eve doesn't know the key, so we're going to sum over zeros and ones. And then the first gate was a control not. And the second one is a control Z. And we're going to apply this. In fact, now you can look a little bit. There was something similar when we were doing quantum teleportation, right? And so there is this kind of relationship. And if you do this, okay, and you sum over those, what we get here is half. And I'm not going to go to the small calculation, but by what, and I forgot your name at the back, I said you can see it. The first step is doing this. The second step kills the off-diagonal terms, so you get the unit density matrix. Okay? So now, to kill one, to protect one quantum state, we need two bits of key instead of one bit of key for a classical bit. And then if you have n, a state which is multidimensional, you'll need two n's. And then you know how to do this. Now, there's a really interesting way of thinking about this, which brings back some things that you've learned when we did quantum error correction. You remember we had this equation. What was this equation? That's it. In error correction, we have a bit. It interacts with the environment. So there's some kind of funny interaction in here. And this is the condition that the information that comes in here really comes back there. Okay? So after the error correction and detection of the syndrome and correction, the information comes there. You also know about the no-cloning theorem. So if there was information here, and it ends up here, you know that the environment cannot have any information. If you could copy, maybe some piece would leak. But in quantum mechanics, you cannot copy. So all the information is left here. Okay. And so when you look at this, there's a similarity. Once you encode, you want zero information left in here. And you can do this by having the state plus and plus in here, it turns out. Because then you have a superposition of the 0 and 1, and then it's got, the information there will get entangled. And then you can look at, inspired by this, you don't want any information to out there. So the information has to be here in some way. And usually when we think about this operator, it is operators which maps, let's say, for one qubit, a one qubit state to a one qubit state. But you can generalize it as a map that goes from here to here, to these two bits. Okay? So how do we do this? We have rho, which we start, tensor plus 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 for the two qubits at the bottom. We have a unitary transformation which corresponds to these two things. And this is my final density matrix. And you can take some traces. What we did, if this would be the environment, and we want to find the E's for the environment, we would trace over 2 and 3. And then, so the trace over this piece with this, or the qubit 2 and 3, would give us the usual operators that we thought about that acts on this density matrix. But I want to do it, be tricky, and do some nifty things. I'm going to trace over the first qubit. And then I'm thinking about this map that we have, a map from that qubit to the second and third qubit. I'm going to have some operator alpha, which maps from rho to qubit 2 and 3. So these matrix are not going to be square, 2 by 2, but they'll be 2 by 4. And the condition that this is unit turns out to be this. And it comes from the same thing, that if all the information is here and there's none there for Eve to look at, it must be all there. So this condition that you've seen for quantum error correction can be used somewhere else for quantum private channels. Should I go through the details of these E's? Yes or no? You have to. You cannot be in superposition, but you can go and compute. So that finishes what the lectures that I've had today. So I can go back 3 weeks ago and tell you what have we done in the last 3 weeks. So you started with what is the motivation of why we're interested in quantum computing. And there is a variety of things from fundamental science. We learn how manipulating information with quantum system is different than with classical system. And there are certain things that we can do that we couldn't do before. Simple protocol teleportation and something compression, and the Schumacher compression that we could do. Then we've learned about implementation, that these ideas can be implemented, although very humbly with a few quantum bits. But it's sufficient to show that it's not that crazy that bits of information can be in superpositions. And then we went to look at some algorithms. We look at factoring, we look at Grover, about simulation of quantum physics, places where we can apply some of these ideas. And then if you have some devices, some interesting things you could do with them, you want to see how possible it is. And as soon as you have implementation, you know that things are not going to be perfect. So we talked about quantum error correction, about our way of, although the world is not perfect, you can make your machine robust to these imperfections. And I gave you an idea of exactly how did that work. And we finished in the last, yesterday and today, with kind of something which is not really quantum computing, but kind of definitely quantum information processing, how to use ideas of quantum to exchange a key between Alice and Bob. And in the last minute, I said to you, you can use this key not to exchange only classical information, but now you really want to use quantum information, so, but you want to keep it private. So here's a way to do all this.
So how does the decoding work in the quantum case? Do you just apply the same gates in reverse order?
Yes.
And so then you need to know which gates were applied. Is that what the key to key is?
Gates
are?
Exactly.
Okay. And that can be classically distributed.
What you need to decode here is to know, is this 00, 01, 10, or 11? What is the state that was there? Let's assume it's one of those, to make it simple. So you have to distribute that key. Instead, the difference between the classical encoding, the classical things for QKD and the quantum private channel is that you will need two bits of classical information to decode the quantum state, and you need only one bit for the classical state. Now you have to exchange that key. And you can rely on QKD if you want. If you think your quantum computer, the quantum computers around the world are not too big, and then you want your quantum state will not be that important in 10 years from now, then you can use factoring if you want, or elliptic curve cryptography, you can do it this way.
Do you still want to talk about LIGO?
Oh, I can make a comment about LIGO if you... Okay, so who knows about LIGO?
What about LIGO?
Do you know something about LIGO?
Yeah.
Okay. So at least a month ago, there was an announcement about LIGO. What was it?
Discovery
of gravitational wave. So I haven't prepared it. So maybe we should stop that that recording. So I do you know how the idea of LIGO works? So it is an interferometer. So yeah, a laser. Okay, goes to a beam splitter. Now you know how beam splitter works. Light goes there, and goes there. There's a mirror here, and there's a mirror here. Light bounces back, and the beam splitter is set up so that you have an output which is here. If you are classical physicists. You can think of light as a little wave. It goes all the way there, all the way back, all the way here. And there's another piece of wave that comes up there and there. So here you will see, you'll put a detector, okay? And the intensity that you will see here will depend how many wavelengths have gone through, or kind of where you are in the phase of the wave, you add it to this one. So if you move this one a little bit, you'll see the intensity of the light down there kind of oscillating. Okay. This is the basic idea of an interferometer. LIGO is making this incredible, incredible interferometer where the arms are many kilometers. And if I remember well, it's about 4 kilometers on each of them. Okay. And the idea of LIGO is that if we have gravitational waves are such impact on interferometer that it makes this one shrink and this one expand. So yeah, it kind of make this one dilate and this one shrink. So that makes a signal which is characteristic to a gravitational wave. If you have a earthquake, which would go this way, you would or kind of a wave on the ground, it would make those two things kind of extend together and come back. So you can rule out some of the signal because of the characteristic of LIGO. So people have been working on this for, so the first ideas of looking for gravitational waves were around the 1960s, we're not using interferometer, but I think these ideas come from the 1980s, about doing this. How much precision that you can look at this, kind of what is the movement, how fine the movement of this can be and still detect. So I think for LIGO, you needed something like 10 to the minus 9, the size of a proton. And then don't take that number exact. This is where I should have looked at the paper. But it's incredibly small, fine precision. And so what people are doing is that they're looking at these variations, and there's a lot of source of noise. So they look at different frequencies, because we don't know the gravitational wave is going to come. We'll have a frequency of this thing oscillating a little bit. And so you have to look at different frequency, and they get some kind of fluff that comes in there. I don't understand exactly the details of, so this is the signal, and this is the frequency. And exactly what, why is that shape is something that I don't know, I've never kind of went to look at. But we know that there is one limit that comes from the quantum world that inhibits you to bring that, which is a very interesting piece. We have electromagnetic field. We send a very powerful laser here, and we don't send anything here. So if you're a classical physicist, there's no impact of sending nothing. But you're a quantum physicist. You know that there is the ground state of the electromagnetic field, and there are fluctuations. A fluctuation on the electromagnetic field, they behave like harmonic oscillators, so the x is not a position of the field, but the intensity of this field, and the electric and magnetic field, for example, the x, delta p of that field, has to be greater than h bar. Which means a small fluctuation of the field here is going to be seen, will go through this, two arms, and will have an effect on what you see. And this brings a fundamental limit to what you can measure, okay, because of the uncertainty principle. So when people started to look at this, they said, okay, this is the uncertainty principle. Can you beat the uncertainty principle?
Like yes or no? You wouldn't be asking the question. You wouldn't be asking the question if it was.
So can you beat the uncertainty principle? So yes? How many yes? No, you have to stick to your neck out. One. Do I assume that all the other ones say that we cannot be, so who raised their hand for you cannot beat the uncertainty principle? And there's someone who's a superposition of being a yes and no.
I need a more precise definition of beating.
This equation. So, if quantum mechanics, so here's my answer. If quantum mechanics is true, is the real fundamental theory of nature, you cannot beat the uncertain principle because it's ingrained. But this part of our presentation, kind of as a something that you can get around in some form so that you can improve the precision here. Okay? It is this part here, delta x, the length of the field, which really limits you. Can we decrease this? Well, there's no problem of decreasing this at the expense of increasing this. Okay? So when you look at phase space, q, x, and p, in classical mechanics or not harmonic oscillator, if you look at the harmonic oscillator or a pendulum, it goes like this in your pendulum. When you arrive in the middle where the position is zero, the momentum is maximum. Right? And then the pendulum goes like this, kind of, all right. So the pendulum's view, the harmonic oscillator, is a path. It's either like this or the other way around. And now, your job to find a sign of it goes like this or like this. So it goes like this. And you could think, now let's try to adapt this to quantum mechanics. You have different, the ground state is like this. The first excited state is like this. And the third excited state is this form. It's possible to make states which preserve, I'll stop there and then I'll make a. The ground state of the harmonic oscillator, what does it look like?
It's a Gaussian.
Okay. E to the minus x squared divided by alpha, where alpha is related to the mass and the spring constant of the harmonic oscillator. And you can go and work out this constant. So if you look at the state, it looks this way. And kind of, if you look for your transform, you look at something which is of this form. In fact, there is a way of looking at quantum mechanics, which is not in the wave function, but something which is called the Wigner function, which is a Fourier transform. And again, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it will look like delta e to the minus delta p e to the x minus delta squared. Okay, so x. So this wave function square would be there. So this is the state, the ground state. This is the star ground state. So it's some kind of density matrix. And we do some slightly weird Fourier transform. If it would be the total Fourier transform, you'd have to do two of those. But I'm going to do one of those because I want to think about quantum mechanics in some phase space. Okay? If you look at the ground state, it looks like a Gaussian both in x and in y, which is what you expect looking at this. Okay? It turns out that the first excited state doesn't look like a Gaussian state anymore. If I make a cut, it's kind of looking at something which I think is something like this.
I think it's upside down.
That's just good. That's just
it's what?
Upside down. This is different. Yeah.
So you've seen that diagram. Perfect. Then you can start to look at what are the states you can do. And there's a family of states which are called squeezed states. Okay? And it's a state where essentially you change that constant of alpha. And it's called squeeze because when you take a picture of it, you squeeze either the x or the p. You can do whatever you want in such a way that delta x, okay, prime, I'll call it the prime in the new state, is much smaller than delta x at the expense of delta p prime. much bigger than the initial delta p that you had. So you shrink this for the expense of doing this so that the uncertainty principle is still correct. But why this is interesting? Because if you inject a squeeze state in here instead of a vacuum, you can improve the precision at which you measure things. Because the precision was impacted only by this piece. So you can improve the precision looking. So people have done this. So they have these huge interferometer. The power of this laser is really high. Think, inject something which is quite small of this squeeze state. And or before injecting the mix state, the squeeze state, it's quite incredible that the vacuum, they can see the vacuum fluctuation in this diagram. It's totally mind-blowing. They really do see an effect. But without comparing to something else, then you don't know how much is the contribution from the vacuum fluctuation and from other things. The garbage truck passing in the second street also has affect this interferometer. So if you inject these squeeze states, then you can take it out and what you see. And if I would have my laptop, I would show you the real picture. Again, you will suffer my artistic qualities. You see something which is lower. And I find this totally, totally amazing that this plot shows you that there are indeed quantum fluctuation. And so this is what I wanted to mention about LIGO, that there is a piece which is really a quantum sensor in there, because you're using a quantum state of light to make this happen. If you have these squeeze states, then you wouldn't be able to kind of improve the sensitivity there. And we often think quantum being small, but these squeeze states go for kilometers. You're measuring these things which are far away apart, but by this piece of technology, I was going to say that a small piece of technology, but it's not small. And it's pretty amazing that you have some of this. And if you're interested more in these quantum sensor, which is something which is evolving pretty rapidly, David Corey's lectures in a couple of weeks will talk about other types of sensors and other places where we can take advantage of quantum mechanics, which are complementary to computation and communication, which is what I focused on. Okay.
I have one more question, but that one really has to be without recording, so maybe we can we could move to the time room for it, to the side room for it.
I think we should stop.
Okay, I'm gonna stop the recording.
The question.